The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with Bob Dio, Bob engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. If he was on this side of the glass, he'd be wishing you, like I do, have a great Friday. It's Friday, July 19th, 2019. Where is the rain? Wow, 31 years here in town. I know I'm sounding like a broken record, but is this the year that we really don't get a summer rainy season? Next week's rainfall saying chance of rain here in the Tucson area, very slim. So, hey, it's past time, folks, for that rainy season to crank up. We're live weekdays during the noon hour on 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted local news and talk. We have worldwide live listening and our podcasts on buckmastershow.com. Our media partners, Friday we like to do our media shout-out. Dylan Smith at TucsonSentinel.com has been supporting us for years. Green Valley News and Sahorita Sun, Dan Shear. Dan, thank you for all your support.
Thank you.
The Tucson Local Media Group and its portfolio of publications includes Inside Tucson Business, the Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Our Friday Focus interview today, Reverend Dr. Robin Hoover is with us. Dr. Hoover, nearly 20 years ago, started the Tucson-based nonprofit Humane Borders to prevent migrant deaths by providing water for migrants crossing the Arizona desert. Now he has a new project. It's called Migrant Status Incorporated, which publishes the Migrant Guide, which is all about trying to provide information and tackling this lack of information that leaves many migrants vulnerable. Joining me in studio for our conversation with Dr. Hoover, Joe Ferguson is here, political writer for the Arizona Daily Star. Joe, how are you?
I'm well, thanks.
How's your week been?
It's busy.
I bet. And Dan Shear, editorial editor for more than two dozen WIC newspaper publications. Dan, of course, the editor of the Green Valley News and Sahorita Sun. He's always a very busy guy. Dan, thank you for coming in.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Let's get right at it, Reverend Hoover. First of all, it's good to see you again. Thanks for being with us.
Good to see you, Bill. Great to be with you again.
I want to talk a little bit about the Migrant Guide. Your critics say the Migrant Guide is basically a primer for illegal immigration. What do you say to those critics?
Well, I just say that providing information to young people that they need to survive their journey in Mexico or crossing our border is the most basic level of informed consent. It's an ethics question. They're lacking information, and maybe they will make a decision not to come or make a decision to come when the climate's better.
How are they finding the guide?
Well, this is a complicated thing. We knew that we could not publish and distribute this to the best location, so we finally figured out that we can create a website, and there's a lot of people in the United States, billions of people to be precise, who know who's coming on any given day, and they can direct them to that site. And so it's been up on Univision and other Spanish language sites, and we're linking to various organizations and distributing information and shelters all the way into Guatemala.
What is the connection between the drug cartels and illegal immigration at this point?
Well, it's real simple. The United States created the cartels. We created the market for creating migrant guides. We use neoliberal economic policies to drive up the price of migration, and that transferred billions of dollars to the cartel. The cartels got very interested in it because the penalties for moving people across the desert is much less than moving drugs. So by taking the enforcement strategies that we've taken, we created the cartels.
Are they bringing drugs with them?
That rarely happens.
So that's not part of the package.
It does happen. It rarely happens.
Why? Because of the brings additional heat to the cartels?
Well, you're taking a risk. Most of the pot comes across the desert, and a lot of guys will walk that off. That does happen. But the heavy narcotics and so forth, governments stats. 90-some-odd percent comes through the port of entry.
All right, let's bring our guest reporters in. Dan Scheer, go ahead.
I want to go back to the migrant guide, and I've read it. The whole thing is in Spanish, but I can get through it, and at the top it says, this information will save your life. As I was looking through this, I thought, why did this information not all exist in one spot in the past, or has it?
To my knowledge, it does not exist anywhere, and we're hoping to double, triple, quadruple the size of this website over time as we accumulate information that is needed by the migrants, and that would be based upon our continuing interviewing that's going on in shelters in Mexico.
But we know that a lot of information that the migrants had when they were coming up was bad information. It's kind of passed on from one person to the next. We've heard of buses heading north, and they would make some announcements about what they were about to face and everything. Largely, the information they had, were you finding that it was incorrect, out of date, just flat out bad?
All of the above. In fact, it was information that was primarily controlled either by the cartel for the cartel's purposes, or it was in the form of some sort of a fear package or scare package from public service announcements by the United States government.
Joe Ferguson of the Arizona Daily Star.
I'm interested to know a little bit about publishing the guide in this political climate. What has been the blowback in terms of publishing this to you and to those, you know, that work with you?
We've had none. You know, there's a few people want to get involved in some name calling here and there, but virtually no one's contacted me on this issue.
In decades of working in this issue, you haven't had death threats?
Oh, I've had plenty of death threats. I had one of the FBI agents here in the Tucson area on speed dial 15 years ago. So Janet Napolitano was in a meeting with me and called out right after 911, called across the room to a FBI agent, says, "You two will meet after this meeting and unload and share information."
Sanctuary City, will it pass? Do you believe in the city of Tucson? And should it, will you vote for it?
Oh, I'd vote for it. Of course I will. Just shared with you a moment ago, it's kind of a symbolic politics. There's no real opposition to it in terms of any campaign or nobody who's running for office that's their platform or anything of that nature. Tucson is a city that's been long associated since 82 to the sanctuary movement that got transferred into city and county and state politics in a different way than it originated in the church. But it does basically means we're not going to allow federal government, we're not going to cooperate with federal government to enforce federal policy.
Would you say Tucson is the birthplace of the sanctuary movement?
It is, but there were simultaneous things going on. In California, they wanted family reunification. The Catholic Church was all into getting people over here, and I would basically say they were providing constituency service. In Chicago is a way of resisting Ronald Reagan. In South Texas, where most people crossed and where I was working as a sanctuary worker, you just put your head down, move people forward, and did your business and kept quiet.
Is illegal migration down, the number of crossers?
Dramatically down. I do have to emphasize, though, that the rate of death is something like five times what it was in 2002.
Did you say five?
Five times as high. So when you have far fewer people coming and you have approximately the same number of deaths, you have the rate of death is like five times what it was. And we can tell you precisely how that happens. If you used to be migrants, you could just go out and find them walking along highways. And now they're going to jeep trails. And then now they're going to where there's no vehicle access, and a broken ankle or twisted ankle even is a death sentence. So when we say the enforcement pushes people deeper into the desert, what we really mean to say is that they're farther and farther away from more accessible routes for traffic.
So here's Dan Scheer from WIC Publications.
Back to sanctuary city status for Tucson. You just described a scene where Governor Janet Napolitano pointed at an FBI agent and said, "You will, quote, unload and share information," unquote, with the Reverend Hoover. Sanctuary status for Tucson, in essence, says that you can't do that very thing that she said was very valuable, and that is for people to share information. Isn't that kind of one of the big swats at sanctuary city status?
Yeah, but that's complicated. In that particular instance, that was had to do with my personal safety. The imam who was seated beside me also had the same conversation. Let me tell you a little story. Right out here at Three Points, we had a guy that was hearing coyotes and stuff, and he had 40 acres of land, and he went out on his front porch, and he fired off his shotgun, 20-gauge up in the air, disabled man, and a couple of Border Patrol agents ran up there, and they were going to arrest him and do all this sort of stuff. Well, he was on his own property, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. But right at about that time, the Border Patrol wanted to deputize a lot of sheriff's deputies, something that they finally done. If they had been deputized earlier, et cetera, they, if the agents were deputized by the county and sharing credentials, that guy would have been in prison for getting varmints off his property. That's insane. So we have to find better ways to do it. We need to have very separate lines.
We're going to take our break right here. Reverend Robin Hoover with us. Dr. Hoover, were you the co-founder?
Well, I was elected founder and eventually president and then president emeritus.
Of Humane Borders, his latest project he's working on is the Migrant Guide, 790-2040. If you have any questions about immigration for Dr. Hoover, he would be delighted to take your call. Dan Scheer here from the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. Joe Ferguson is here from the Arizona Daily Star. When we come back with Reverend Hoover, if the Trump administration is successful in basically ending asylum seeking at the southern border, and now reports that the administration is seriously mulling an effort to slash refugee admissions to near zero, what will that do to the number of people trying to come into this country illegally? You want to give us a little preview?
Well,
one or two word
answer. It's going to send it way down.
It's going to send it way down. You'll elaborate on that after we take the break. But first, Dan, you know what I want to talk about right now since you're ably host this show when I'm away.
Food, food, food.
Mona's Danish Bakery is home of the Danish Kringle. Reverend Hoover, have you been up to the Mona's Danish Bakery, the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise?
I have been there once.
Well, perhaps you would like to go again. owner and chief baker Steve has now put in a grill up there, so they're doing breakfast at 6:30 in the morning.
I eat breakfast.
There you go. Breakfast available at 6:30. They're open right now for lunch. Northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise, monasdanishbakery.com. And, of course, if you go to buckmastershow.com, there is a link there to Mona's and all of our great sponsors. Joe, could you do with some bakery goods or something to eat right about now?
I was just thinking about it.
I thought you were. All right, we'll take the break right here. Reverend Hoover sticks around, and we will elaborate a little bit about how the Trump administration's policies of, in effect, what is looking like zero immigration entry into this country, what is that going to mean for illegal immigration to this country? Be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To sign up for RTA updates, visit rtamobility.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Moe has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Moe for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from The Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, the Friday Focus interview today. The Reverend Robin Hoover is with us, the founder of the Humane Borders Movement here in Southern Arizona, 790-2040. Reverend Hoover's latest project is the Migrant Guide, which will give migrants information they need about crossing the desert. Again, 790-2040 if you'd like to join the conversation. Dan Scheer is here from the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. Joe Ferguson of the Arizona Daily Star. We were talking before the break about how illegal immigration will predict it will skyrocket if we have a zero tolerance at the border. With entry, basically cutting off all immigration into this country.
People will just come illegally. Asylum is a legal way to come. Refugee status is something that you can obtain. It's a legal way to migrate. Just like the father and child that died in the Rio Grande so notoriously, I guess I should say right now, they'll try to come illegally.
Joe Ferguson from the Arizona Daily Star.
Just want to take a minute to ask your opinion about the fight over where refugees are going to go after the monastery closes. There's a big decision coming for the Board of Supervisors on Monday, with many pushing for a juvenile detention facility to be turned into like a dorm-like structure. So how do you feel about that?
I'm all for it. I think it should go quickly. I understand the hesitancy, and I understand that what we name something matters and some of the language that unfolded, but churches have become mosques and jails have become schools and pyramids became churches. And you know, what you name something's important, but we can do this. And the church, Casas Elitas and the Catholic Church have taught us really well, and the church is doing its best when it teaches the world how to take care of itself. And they've never been able to do it with all of their own resources. And so when we have a humanitarian, religiously motivated or not, movement come in here and say, you know, here's the better way. This works. We've modeled it. We've shown you how to do it. The public should follow suit.
But we have lots of different piles of money. One is federal, one is county. And I think that's the big issue is here is that if the Fed grant doesn't come through, will the county be on the hook? And is this really the job of the county? Everybody gets it. It's a humanitarian situation that is really out of control and that we can have a role here as a border county. But you have to understand that there is some hesitancy because the leaders still are responsible for spending our money as it's supposed to be spent.
Of course they do. And I was, as you can imagine, I was involved in some of the caravans coming up through Mexico. And I can tell you, here we go, law and order. And we want to know who's going to pay the bottom line, who's going to pay the bill, et cetera. The Mexicans deal with this very differently. They want more order. So if you can pass through the country, the states and the cities, municipalities, the charities, all just move in, take care of everybody, feed everybody, see to it that they move on, minimize the interactions between the migrating person and the local communities through which they're passing, and they get their order. I work with the top cop in Sonora on this issue, and they look at it very, very differently. And I think our soups are looking at it that way. They want some order. Even the sheriff has said, you know, it's not a good idea to have these people run around the street. So there, it is in our best interest to do this well, and I hope the feds will eventually be on the hook for some of these dollars.
But if it were a short-term situation, I would get that, but this thing could stretch on for years.
But really, if we're talking about this, you know, is it $1 million a year much more expensive than the cost to police and to hospitals and to charities if these people are just dropped off at the bus stop?
You could spend far more money and have lawsuits eventuate that would be very expensive. So it's better to just keep an eye on people and create a little order and get them to their hosts.
What do you think about the religious community that has been backing President Trump? Do you find a disconnect there? Because the question is often asked and of religious people, what would Jesus do in a situation like this?
Jesus wouldn't be doing this. Let me say, you know, there's a rather famous parable of Jesus where the Roman centurion comes up and says, here, carry my armor and my gear and stuff to Jesus, and he carries it an extra mile. He didn't do it because he was a sweetheart. He did it to shame this son of a gun. And if the faith communities out there are doing their jobs correctly, they need to be on the street shaming the American government for what they're doing, shaming the Border Patrol for the stuff that they're doing on a regular basis. These guys get arrested for major felonies every 36 hours in the United States. So you got to clean up in law enforcement, and we've got to get some people in the right mind in Congress.
Are you saying that they would be arrested, Border Patrol people, for felonies?
They are. Every 36 hours, that's the average. It used to be one a day for robbery, rape, murder, drug trafficking, and everything else. And the only reason that it's 36 hours instead of 20 hours is because they never put any money in the Office of Inspector General to get this stuff done.
Dan, go ahead.
I'm not so sure that Jesus would be out on the street corner rallying people. I think that he'd be working quietly, which is exactly what the scripture teaches. I want to go at this a different...
Yeah, Palm Sunday was a dramatic, dramaturgy is the correct word, to mock the Roman soldiers that were coming in from the other side of the city at the same time.
I want to go at this from a different angle. What do you think about reaching into the countries, Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala, to help solve this issue? Because I think everybody would agree we can't take everybody into this country who wants to come.
I absolutely agree that you can. It'd be ideal if everybody could live and have a good, be born, live, and die within a reasonable distance of where you grew up, you know, so forth. So that's wonderful. But
what does that look like?
Obama sent Joe Biden down there and saying, oh, well, you people need to apply for refugee status or asylum using an embassy and stay in situ for 2 years and so forth. Well, if they do, they'll be dead.
So what does that look like, though? Because I'm hearing more and more people talking about that, reaching other countries. And again, we're not talking a military action here. I'm not sure how it would look, because the cartels very quickly would jump in and take advantage. The governments are corrupt. There's a lot of awful things going on there. But how would that look if it were to play out?
I'm going to quote former Bishop Minerva Carcano, who used to be the Methodist bishop here, and when in giving testimony to Congress, it says, well, it'd be real nice if the United States quit going into Central America, especially in the Northern Triangle, and raping that culture and that government, those governments. So, and the person who was asking questions says, that's a strong word, says, well, that's what you're doing. And so we've been at it for a long time. If we had loved our neighbor to the south for 240 years the way we love ourselves, we wouldn't even be talking about China. There's more natural resources in South America than there are in North America. We wouldn't even need anybody if we were in good relationships. We're not in a right relationship with our neighbors.
Telling people to leave the country, is that necessarily new?
No. We've been at this since the United States was founded. It really started reaching a peak in the 1880s and coming up into the 1920s. You can go back and read the histories of the Irish and Jewish migration and so forth, eugenics. Anything that separates us from them has been on the table and in public discourse for in a very large way since we had the capacity to generate big newspapers, et cetera. And I'm not picking on newspapers, by the way, but ever since we've had big mass communication models, this has been going on for 150 years or so, and there's nothing new. The rhetoric's not new. The ideas and the reference that we use to make our decision about our gene pool and our colors and our caste system and everything else that we have here in the United States. And the irony is that we are the only large major nation on earth that continues to grow. And apparently because we want to, because of immigration, legal or otherwise. So other countries do try to limit this, that, and the other. One of the things that has to be put out here in the public mind is that we are not a nation. We are a country. We're a legal experiment. You know, we are not people of the with a very consistent ethnic background or practice or racial composition, etc. The largest minority ever to be citizens in the United States were Asians, and we killed more of them in the Philippines than died in the entire Civil War on both sides, and they were U.S. citizens. So, you know, this thing could get way out of hand real fast.
Are you fearful it will?
Well, of course I'm fearful. I live in hope. I'm always not such an optimistic person, but I don't think we're there. But it could get crazy.
Dan Scheer.
What would a sensible national immigration policy look like?
Oh, it's really this thing is so simple. I was on the front page of the New York Times saying the United States has a stunning lack of imagination. All you got to do is bring everybody in who's already here, living undocumented, do all the extreme vetting that you want to, do all the document preparations, get the administrative law judges in front of these folks and give them a very long-term visa based on their personal needs, et cetera. Could be even 10, 12 years. And then say, if you want to become a citizen, go get in the citizenship line. In the meantime, we've gotten information as to who that person is. We've solved the question of legality. We know who they are. We know it's short-term. We know that they want to have to go through all kinds of processes. For those that want to come here and participate in our economy, we can screen that based on merit. We can allow the countries of origin to be exempt from the quota of national origin and allow the Labor Department to certify we're going to take in X number of people a year, et cetera. We want the following skills. You apply for the job. You get it. You live open. You can bring your family. You can bring your kids. The visa for that kind of work is in the hands of that worker and not in the employer. So if you have a human rights violation and you're working in a hotel in Las Vegas, you can leave that hotel and go down the street and find another job. Just basically treat people that want to come here and work the same way we currently do with high-tech work.
Is that similar to the amnesty program that was put forward?
No, absolutely not. The Immigration Reform and Control Act of 86 allowed for this very long legalization process that was just basically a make-work thing for every immigration attorney in the United States. But that led to citizenship. So basically I'm saying you give a long-term visa, you have a legal status. Most of the people who come here and have papers, if you will, there's 98 different visas to the last count, and most of those are non-immigrant visas. You're not going to be here permanently. You have some reason to be here temporarily. You might be flying from Tokyo, and you have to have a visa to land in Chicago, and then you fly on to Europe or something of that nature. There's every kind of visa imaginable. All we're doing is saying you now have a legal status to be present. You can present it to any law enforcement official, and you can share in our economy until that's over, and then you need to get out of here. The one thing that I'm famous for, if in a group of five people maybe, is to create an economic incentive to we need to use some serious market forces. So if somebody wants to come here and work, you post a bond. If you don't comply with that, take your money and go home. It's forfeited to law enforcement. And they come look for you. They don't stop me south of Green Valley and check me. It's now targeted to individuals instead of dealing with the whole population.
All right. We're going to let Reverend Hoover go. But for those just joining us, Reverend Hoover said illegal immigration is down dramatically. But I also believe he said that the number of deaths in the desert has skyrocketed up about five times what it was just a few years ago. And the reason for that, Reverend Hoover?
Migrants are being apprehended and dying much farther away from more safely traveled routes, away from roads specifically is our reference point when we use geographical information system technology. But basically, they're walking in much more corrugated, higher altitude areas and higher elevation, and it's just much more difficult. It takes longer. You're exposed to the elements for longer.
Is water being available?
Water is not available anywhere near as sufficiently as it should be. When Humane Borders was founded, we put out water in places that could be serviced by vehicles, and now most of those routes where they're dying are not accessible by vehicles, although frequently the migrants do cross areas that could be still serviced by vehicles and provide a lot more help. That's true in the Cabeza Prieta Refuge. It's even true on the eastern end of the Barry Goldwater bombing range, but they won't let us even have the conversation. And it's particularly important to do this on the Tanahatam Reservation. On the top, they do not allow humanitarian assistance, and up to 42 to 45% of the deaths over the last 15 years have been on the reservation.
Is water being available where there are water spots? Does the Border Patrol cooperate?
Well, they got a mixed history on that one. One of the former chiefs here, I won't name David Aguilar by name, used to use his helicopter pilots would fly our flags over our stations like pins on a golf course, and they would even refer agents on the ground working as to where they could find that state. Everybody knows where what the geography is, and they would report to us when a flag needed repair. So, but that kind of cooperation is gone now.
All right, Reverend Robin Hoover, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, everyone.
All right, Dan Scheer and Joe Ferguson will be back with us as we continue with our roundtable portion. It's the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news talk. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
At Sierra Tucson, we see miracles of healing every day. We are honored to be an international premier treatment center right here in Southern Arizona. Our comprehensive evidence-based programs focus on addiction recovery, mood and anxiety disorders, trauma recovery, including PTSD, pain recovery, and co-occurring disorders. Learn more at sierratucson.com. Or call us at 800-842-4487. We work with most insurance payers.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Joe Ferguson, political writer for the Arizona Daily Star, Dan Scheer, editor of the Green Valley News, Saharita Sun, and the WIC newspaper chain, where he is the editorial director over more than two dozen papers. Joe, you were at the mayoral debate last night. Things starting to get ugly between Regina Romero, who was on my show yesterday, and Steve Farley.
Yeah, they definitely got a few barbs in last night in a 90-minute debate organized by the Democratic Party. They certainly had different opinions about different things. They brought up donors. Regina didn't like some of the things that Steve has been saying about Red for Ed, saying that he helped facilitate a better deal. So it was a lively discussion, but it gave a lot of people a lot to think about as they left that debate.
And this, of course, comes as early ballots.
Two more weeks, August 2nd, they should start shipping them out.
Dan, what are you hearing about the fundraising? Mr. Kelly, the former astronaut, has been out raising McSally in the race for the Arizona Senate.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't think we should be surprised at that. McSally was just through our area just last week and met with her, and she is just plugging away. A lot more press releases coming out of her office these days, which is not a surprise. So she is just wants to put forth the thought that, hey, she's in there working hard and really isn't going to be worrying about the campaign so much at this point. And Mark Kelly, of course, has been out there meeting people, getting around. We'll see. It's still really too early on this one.
Joe, fundraising in the mayoral race.
Big numbers. We're seeing a lot of candidates getting individual donations that are pretty high. So, you know, there's a lot of strong interest in that way. The city's clean election system helps boost those numbers. But, you know, between the three candidates, they're going to spend $500,000 probably in the next 6 weeks.
Not a surprise, gentlemen, that Reverend Hoover is on board with the Sanctuary City movement. It's going to be very interesting to see how this plays. And Tucson would become then the first city in the state of Arizona to become a sanctuary city. But whether or not legally it would ever see the light of day, Joe, is a question.
Yes, it is. The Republican Party has threatened to sue over it to keep it off the ballot. And I've been told by even organizers that even after it's voted on, and if voters approve it, it'll be a challenge to get in the courts.
And Dan, what would this do to the city of Tucson's reputation, do you think?
That's a great question, and I don't know that it's the primary question, but I don't know that it could have, it's going to change its reputation statewide. I come from the Maricopa County, where I was raised, and Tucson has always had kind of a reputation for certainly being far left, so I don't think this is going to, it'll cement that, if anything else. I think the main concern, though, is that law enforcement agencies rise and fall in sharing information. Their safety, our safety, is at stake here, and I think some people think the sanctuary status would work against that.
How about your area, which is so close to the border? Are they following what the things that Reverend Hoover was discussing on our program?
Yeah, I think right now we have got quite a few people wrapped up in working at the monastery, and then they'll transfer over to the juvenile detention facility.
Oh, you have folks coming up from Green Valley to help.
Absolutely. A lot of them. And they're the people who are taking the laundry home and doing it. And they've been heavily, heavily involved in this. And right now, for the last 2 months and for the foreseeable future, they are doing rallies on the street corners three times a week. down there, and because they feel so passionate about this, and we went out and covered one of them and talked to them, and we've done a few stories because they are so heavily involved. So great, great interest in all of this.
And it'd be a generalization to say Green Valley is a conservative area?
No, old, white, and conservative is what I thought it was when I arrived 10 years ago, and it's still old and white. as we have said, the 60s hippies have retired and moved to Green Valley, and so they're very active.
Joe Ferguson, how does it look for the special meeting that will be coming up on Monday? Five members of the Board of Supervisors will be voting on whether or not to use a portion of the not utilized Pima County Juvenile Detention Center for migrants.
Well, reading the tea leaves suggests to me that they've got three votes for this thing, or they would not be having a special meeting on Monday. Whether they're going to get four is a very good question. Supervisor Miller put out a statement today. She saw it, Buck, Bill, I think you saw it as well. And she said that, you know, this is a really complicated issue, but she said that, you know, she wants that it has to be addressed. And so with 2 weeks before the monastery closes for good, I think she's a wild card in Monday's discussion.
Because she did mention about putting these people on the street in her news release, which kind of left the door open, Dan, to perhaps going and saying that this would be a lesser of two evils. Rather than put the people on the street, the taxpayers are going to be footing the bill here initially, that might be preferable to putting these people out on the street.
Yeah, and they will be put on the street. And so they're going to be coming, and they would be dropped. And is it going to be a better or worse situation for that? So she's really looking at this thing, I think, from all different angles. We just talked to Steve Christie hour and a half ago, and he has some big questions about spending county money on this, and would a federal grant come through? And Allie Miller made it clear, too. She says, look, this is a federal issue. They should be paying for this. But on the other hand, she also understands that you look out the window, and you see these people arriving by the busload.
Will they get reimbursed, Joe Ferguson, from the federal government?
That's a question we don't know the answer to. Stone Garden has money set aside for humanitarian relief. There's been a recent federal bill that suggests that the money could be applied for this purpose. But, you know, this is a question of whether they're going to get paid. I remember back when I was young, hospitals complaining about births from Mexican mothers and getting reimbursed from the federal government, and that money never came.
Well, and you know, the Stone Garden does have that humanitarian clause. However, it's rarely used, Joe and Dan.
Right, that's absolutely correct. And this time it would be used. I think, though, the other critics are out there who are saying, okay, this is a slippery slope. If we start paying for this as a county, what's next? And I think that's the fear, because everyone can see the issue in front of them. We're a way station, you know, 3 to 5 days, maybe a little bit longer for some people to come here before they can get hooked up with family in the United States. They are here legally. They are asylum seekers who have crossed the first hurdle and now are going to be with family or hosts. And so that's what we're dealing with right here. But people are saying, okay, well, wait a minute. If we're going to open up a county facility for this, are we going to take that next step, and is it going to cost us more money?
And
I just think that when your neighbor's house is on fire, you don't argue about the price of the hose.
And I'm going to predict that at the meeting on Monday, you will hear people say, why is Catholic Services not paying the whole thing, Joe Ferguson?
Well, I don't know if they can.
Oh, yes, they can. They've got a lot of money.
That's
if you check
what
their,
I keep hearing, that some are saying they've got plenty of money to pay for it.
Or they should put a little bit more into it. And we saw this with the whole preschool thing when that was thrown at the counties, why don't you pay for the preschool? And they went back to state money and said, look, you throw a little bit more in, maybe we will too. So are they really in as deep as they could be? That's a good question.
Joe Ferguson, you wrote about South Tucson. Their sales tax has now gone up to 11%. Is that city going to survive as a city, or is there going to be a bankruptcy? What's going to happen? What's the future of this one square mile city?
I think it's very fragile at this point. I know that they have some cash reserves that probably will carry them forward for the next year or two, absent a major emergency. But I just know that they've talked about dissolution. They've talked about bankruptcy, and those options are also complicated. A bankruptcy could have a judge order that the taxes just go up rather than dissolving the city.
And Dan, as Joe points out in his star story, this is pretty startling. Roughly 46% of the city of South Tucson residents live in poverty.
Yeah, and you know, you wonder, could they unincorporate, which I believe in the history of Arizona, as we say, don't quote me on this, one place has done that.
Do you recall what?
I don't recall
Guadalupe.
What it was, but this came up during...
Guadalupe.
Was it Guadalupe? Okay, so, and this came up during the Vail incorporation effort, or did you get annexed into Tucson? Does Tucson even want them? But I will tell you this, South Tucson, to me, is just a fascinating story, and I think the Star has done a good job covering it.
Mm. Thank you. What are the assets there, Joe?
Couple of great restaurants.
Name recognition. I mean, they do have some of the best food in town, but I think, you know, there is very little left in assets. They sold the library,
the Greyhound,
to stay afloat.
Former Greyhound dog racing park, wasn't that in the city of South Tucson?
It is. And there's redevelopment possibilities, but South Tucson has to stay afloat before any major cash can come in.
Dan, big story in your area.
What's
is
that? Yeah.
Fill in the blank.
Oh, gosh. Big. You know what? A couple of weeks ago, we had the body of a hiker who had gone missing in February.
I read about that.
Yeah, and it was really interesting that we figured he would show up, and 82-year-old. And I'll tell you, the real story in all this is that this is a guy who was on his phone, mm-hmm. and he said, "I'm lost. Help me out." And the dispatcher said, stay where you are. We know where you are. At 82, he didn't understand the GPS on his phone. He didn't understand that could tell where he was. Yeah. And you could tell the back and forth on the conversation that he wasn't quite getting it. And the last thing that the dispatcher said was, here's how we know, but there's no indication that the man heard him because that we didn't hear from him
anymore. So he started to move on.
And he moved and was actually quite far away from where that contact was made. So he didn't understand it. So they did change procedures in the Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Office as a result of this incident. So they're not saying anybody did anything wrong, but I think they're just going to kind of drive home the point that an 82-year-old might not fully understand the capabilities of their phone.
Wow. Joe, what's coming up in the Star?
We're going to have a pretty long piece on the development out at Ryan Airfield. I haven't been out there in years, but my colleague Gabby has, and it's really changed over the last years. There's a lot of new growth, schools, and 1,000 homes planned for the area.
One of your friends, Noah, has sent me an email, Dan Shear, reacting quickly to Reverend Hoover. Here it is, quickly. Encouraging false hope for those considering crossing the deadly desert is encouraging death. Humane borders is a sick perversion that could be helpful going south and discouraging any crossers outside legal crossing.
I can't speak for the Reverend Hoover, but I think what he would say is that they're coming anyway.
Well,
let's try to make it as safe as possible.
That was pretty much my first question to Reverend Hoover, saying that the critics, and I'm sure Noah is one of them, see that guide, the migrant guide, Joe Ferguson, as a primer for illegal immigration.
Well, I think that he's trying to get to as many as he can to give them the best information possible.
All right, Joe Ferguson. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
And Dan Shear, always a pleasure. We'll look for your work in the Green Valley News. Anything you want to promote in the paper, Dan?
We're looking at bee attacks. We had another one this week, and we're looking at...
I saw that on Facebook.
And how does it happen? Why does it happen?
The bee operator, the person that does the removal, was attacked.
He was. He just had his uniform on wrong. He won't make that mistake again.
All right. We're going to have Matt Russell coming up next with from Inside Tucson Business with our Weekend Watch right after this on Buckmaster.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Stir it up. That means Weekend Watch with Matt Russell of Inside Tucson Business, an award-winning Tucson publicist. Matt is the food and beverage editor at Inside Tucson Business. Weekend Watch presented by our friends over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. It'd be a great weekend to take the 3-hour drive to visit Southwest New Mexico, because this is the big weekend for the Clay Festival. Clay, everything to do with pottery. So this is the big weekend. Visit the Silver City Clay Festival for the annual celebration of all things clay in the Southwest. Visit southwestnewmexico.org. There you'll find the listing of all the great places to stay and all sorts of recreation opportunities. Let's welcome now the longtime host of Weekend Watch, Matt Russell. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great. Happy Friday, Bill.
Thank you very much, sir. What's at the top of the list of Weekend Watch?
Another Weekend Watch, another restaurant opening, if you can believe it. This one will be music to the ears of all of your listeners with roots in the Empire State. It's a tribute to Brooklyn, and it's called Brooklyn Rolls, and it's over on 6th Street, just west of Campbell. Now, this is a New York-style deli that we East Coasters remember, from New York bagels and brazola and Polish bialys to heroes and pastas, corned beef, pastrami sandwiches. I hear you can even get authentic potato knish there. Start spreading the news. Brooklyn Rolls is officially open today.
This next one is very personal.
Our friends at Bold Restaurant out in Vail have attracted a loyal following, especially for their Bowls of the Week, which are kind of fun and fresh and complete meals that are all served in bowls. Well, Bill, I heard that this week's Bowl of the Week is named after you, good sir.
Wow.
And it is reverently called the Buckmaster Bowl.
That is too cool. I hope it's good eating.
Yeah, they know you're a world traveler, so they drew some inspiration from Italy with a creamy Marsala wine sauce, which they have served with seasoned and shredded chicken, and they put it all on top of a bed of zucchini noodles. It's been a hit this week with multiple requests, as I understand, to have it join the regular menu. So I say, get out to Bold this weekend for the Buckmaster Bowl.
I am so honored. What's going on over at the Kingfisher? They always come up with such creative culinary ideas in the summertime.
They do, sir, and you know it's summer in Tucson when Kingfisher hits the road for a virtual journey to some of the most delicious regions in the country, and this week, the annual Kingfisher Summer Road Trip heads to the Midwest with a special menu that celebrates the culture and the cuisine of our nation's midsection. Now, some of the many selections include pan-fried perch, grilled Northwoods walleye, Indiana duckling, even the drinks and desserts are Midwest-inspired, so looks like I'll be having a Lake Effect brandy cocktail to pair with the Grandma's Lemon Ice Box Pie.
Ooh.
In Midwest or Bust this weekend at Kingfisher.
With my roots in the Middle West, that's music to my ears.
Right.
And
on
the column in Inside Tucson Business.
Yes, to anchovy or not to anchovy? That is the question, and I get to the heart of the great anchovy pizza debate in this week's edition of Inside Tucson Business, and inquiring minds want to know, Bill, are you an anchovy enthusiast like I am?
Not quite as much, but I'm on board.
You'll get there one day.
I'll be there one day. Thank you so much, Matt. Have a great weekend.
Cheers. Right back at you.
All right. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, which is wholly responsible for the content of the program. Original theme music composed by Chris Stefan. Thanks to Rosemary Brandt, my longtime assistant, making sure that all of our programs are very timely posted, usually within an hour or two of their conclusion, at buckmastershow.com. Everyone here at Bustos Media in Tucson, including my engineer producer Bob Dio, really the entire team makes our experience here on Buckmaster a very pleasant one. We thank you for everybody's support. On behalf of all of us, hope you have a great weekend.